And we're holding on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, six lines from the bottom. Mishnah said, "Dine mamonas hakol." We said that when it comes another of the many differences that we said in the Mishnah between dine mamonas and dine nefashos is by dine mamonas, anybody can say zchus or choiva, anybody can say something in favor or against the defendant, whereas by dine nefashos, everybody can say zchus and not everybody can say choiva. So what do we mean by everyone? Hakol va'afilo edim. Now the word hakol, on the face of it, means even edim. Even the edim themselves, for example, who said previously, we have come to Beis Din with evidence that Pliny did something that's chayiv misa, now we're saying that later on in the case, they can say, you know what, actually we realize there's a reason to exonerate him. Well, name a masnissin. Would that mean then that our Mishnah would be only according to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda and not according to the Rabbanan? And as usual, we would rather have that a Stam Mishnah is according to everybody. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. The Pasuk says ve'ed echad lo yana b'nefesh. The Pasuk says one aid should not speak up against a person. So on the face of it, the simple meaning of the Pasuk is, in other words, you need two aidim in order to convict someone. One aid is not enough. But the expression lo yana b'nefesh should not speak up regarding a soul. That means the Tanakhama of the Braisa says bein l'schus bein l'choiva. The aid is not allowed to speak up whether the schus or l'choiva. They say their eidos and then that's it. Then at that point, so basically they give their eidos based and cross examines them. They have no business expressing their opinion one way or the other whether the guy is guilty. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Oyner l'schus vein Oyner l'choiva. Whereas Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda learns the pasuk to be saying that the aid is able to say something in favor of the defendant but not against him. So then if we say that Hakol Malamdin in our Mishnah means the Edim, then it's only according to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says not necessarily. Amar Papa be'echad v'divrei Hakol. No, because the Mishnah, when it says Hakol, doesn't necessarily mean one of the Edim. It means one of the Talmidim. As we talked about previously, there are Talmidim, there are rows of Talmidim sitting in front of the Beis Din. So one of them, if one of them wants to speak up and realizes a point in favor of the accused that the Dayanim haven't thought of, then we hear what he has to say. And in fact, actually, Mefarshim discuss in that case, does he even temporarily count as one of the Dayanim? Or do we say that maybe not? Maybe they just listen to what he has to say, but he doesn't actually count as though he was one of the Dayanim. There's a considerable discussion about that. Tosfos points out that we did say that we did learn previously that if one of the Dayanim says any idea that he says I don't know, then even if later on he finds a reason to say, you know what, actually I do know, we still don't count him back in. So whereas here we're saying we even count the Talmidim, Tosfos says that's the difference would be that there we're talking about he said he wants, having said I don't know, now he wants to say something l'choiva. Whereas over here we're talking about where the Talmid wants to say something l'schus and therefore will accept what he has to say. Okay, well, having mentioned Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, let's discuss it. Fine, we're saying our Mishnah is not specifically addressing his opinion because we're saying that our Mishnah is not referring to the Edim. But let's analyze Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda's opinion anyway. My time at Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda. Why does he say that the Edim have the ability to be melamed zchus? He says, because he says, when you quoted the Pasuk before, you left out a word. You say, the Pasuk says, one aid should not speak up against a person to die. So therefore, lamus. So we can learn from that he can't speak up against him to say a reason why he should die, a reason why he should be executed. Now, in other words, the point is, if the pasuk is just telling us that you can't accept one aid, b'chlal, for dinin nefashos, we don't need this pasuk. We have other psukim that tell us that point. So evidently, the pasuk must be telling us another point. Not only you can't accept one aid for dinin nefashos, which that we know from other psukim, but also that the aid who already spoke up and said his eidos, the facts that he's bringing to the table, I saw this person doing such and such, or we rather saw, because two aidim, but also that afterwards he can't speak up and say, and you know what, I'll tell you a reason, I'll pialocha, that I think this person should be punished, and the reason is such and such. So we can't do that, says Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, implying avalos chus oina. But if he wants to say a reason to exonerate the person, then he can do that. V'rabbanan, one of the Chachamim answer back to that. It's true, the Pasuk does say lamus, so how do they understand differently? And the answer is Omar Resh Lakish Mishum Demachzi Kenegeya Be'edusai. The reason is Resh Lakish says because it's true in principle they might be able to, but the problem is that it looks like Negeya Be'edusai. Namely, in other words, like this. What might happen, Rashi explains, the aide has come and testified that the person did something that makes him chayev misa. Now what happens is, though, he's thinking in the back of his head, now what happens, on the other hand, if Beis Din does end up convicting the guy based on my eidos and the eidos of the other guy who came with me, now what happens is, at that point, the possibility of hazama kicks in, as we learned before, after if we have edim that are going to be mazim them, that come after Gmar Din and before the sentence is executed, then at that point, this aide realizes, you know what, we're going to be in trouble, we're going to be chayiv misa or whatever. So therefore, he might want to retract his edus in order to save himself from that possibility. But again, as we learned before, kiven shehigid shuvei nechozer magid. Once an aide has said edus, then he can't retract that edus anymore. So therefore, that would be a reason, says Resh Lakish, to not allow the aide to say anything l'schus, because he might be saying something l'schus in order to save himself and in order to save himself from the possibility of hazama, and therefore Beis Din should not pay any attention to what he's saying. That's according to Rashi. Various Rishonim point out issues with it. Among other things, is later on. Actually, we're going to learn when we get more into Dinim Mominus in the next parak. We're going to into Dinim Nefashos rather. We're going to talk about that. Even the defendant himself has a right to speak up in his defense and point out something that would exonerate him, and he's certainly negei b'davar. Okay, there actually the Meiri says, fine, all that means is because the Dayanim know that he's Negei B'davar, so they know to take what he's saying with a grain of salt. Certainly they're going to pay attention to it and see whether it taka is a good reason, but they're not going to automatically say that, you know, that whereas with the Edim they might not, but nevertheless, anyway, the Sanhedrin Tana says differently. He says once they said for his choiv, and now also they want to say something of choiv against him in Beis Din, then it comes out, it seems they really, really want him dead. So now when they say choiv against him, then it means that it shows all along the original edus was negeya be'edus. It wasn't necessarily disinterested edus. It's rather it seems that they really have something against him. So now the Chachamim are saying to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, listen, obviously that svara would tell us that they can't say choiv against him at this point, because then that would tell us that their previous edus was negeya be'davar. So therefore, maybe we should say that the Pasuk is telling us that they can't even say schus, even though it's true as far as by if they're saying S'chus, it's not really negeya b'davar, but nevertheless, obviously, the posik wouldn't have to be telling us that they can be say that they can't say choiva, because that would be so obvious. So therefore, it must be l'schus. Another point is as well. Also, if we allow them to speak up schus, there might be the point. Also, they might think to themselves, you know, following Rashi's opinion, you know what? Fine, we'll say choiva, and afterwards, if it turns out that we see that they're about to convict the guy, and we're going to have it on our conscience that we killed an innocent person, or that there might be Adam Zimman or whatever, then we'll speak up and we'll say some schus, and then they won't be so afraid in the first place to testify falsely. So that would be another way of explaining Rashi's opinion of why we don't want them say the Chachamim to say zchus on his behalf either. All right, the Gemara says, V'rabbanan hai lamus mai darshi bei. Well, the fact is the Chachamim are saying the Edim can't speak up for the good of the defendant or for the bad of him. So according to them, what are they darshining from that word lamus? Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda is saying it means specifically they can't say something bad against him after having given their edus. But according to the Chachamim, they can't say something good either. So what are they doing with the word lamus? And the answer is they're going to say that word is referring to not to the Edim. The Edim, according to the Chachamim, can't speak up anything at all. They say they're Edus, and then that's it. Well, they're cross-examined, and then that's it. But rather, we're talking about the Talmidim. Namely, Kedetanya, as we learn in a Braisa, if one of the Edim says, you know, I have something that I can say that would exonerate the guy, how do we know we don't listen to him? Because as we quoted the Pasuk, the Pasuk says one aide should not speak up, meaning the Dayanim tell the aide basically, look, your job is to give the edus over here and then to answer all the questions in cross-examination. We don't want to hear your opinions. We just want to hear the facts that you have to say. On the other hand, and then the Braisa continues. How do we know that if one of the Talmudim says, I have something to his detriment to mention? How do we know we don't listen? So here we're leaving out the word aid. Since the way the Pasuk phrases it is, therefore, in other words, we can darshan the Pasuk in two ways. We can break up the sentence by taking off the word lamus from the end and just focusing on the aid. We can also take off the word aid at the beginning and have echad layana benefesh lamos. One should not speak up against a person to cause him to die, and that the Chachamim say is referring to the Talmidim, that if one of the Talmidim says, you know, Rebbe, I think you're missing something, you're about to exonerate the guy, but don't you realize there's this particular din or this particular detail that would cause him to be guilty, then we tell him we don't want to hear from you. You're a Talmid, you're not a member of the Beis Din, you want to speak up for the good of him, then fine, we'll listen to what you have to say, but not if you speak up something bad for him. We would learn that from the Pasuk. As we touched on the other day, there is the point that Mefor should make. What happens if he does manage to squeeze in a word edgewise? Then based in truth, then they do have to pay attention to what he's saying. After all, he did bring up a svara that otherwise they wouldn't have thought of. But they shouldn't allow him to do that in the first place. Okay. The next part of the Mishnah had said dinin nefoshes hamalamed chola. We said when it comes to dinin nefoshes, if one of the Dayanim had previously said something that he, a reason that he figures would be reason enough to convict the person, then later on he can change his mind during the discussion and say, you know what, actually I found a reason to exonerate him, but not vice versa. If he found a reason to exonerate him, then we don't allow him now to say a reason why he wants to convict him. So Omar Rav, lo shonu el b'shas maso matan. That point, that restriction is only during the discussion. Because the point is, Rashi says, once he's said a reasonless chus, and we're requiring him to stick with that, and we're not allowing him to go to switch over to choiva, that itself is going to give him reason to try and think within all of his to try to uphold his original svara, knowing that he can't change his mind at this point, then that causes him to find reasons to rias and things to uphold his original svara. And we want that, because we want as much as possible to exonerate the person. But when it comes to Gmar Din, at that point, everybody's already delved into and thought over all the possible reasons, pro and con. If at that point he wants to change his mind and say that, you know what, I thought it over, I really can't find any way to uphold my original svara that he should be innocent, then Rav says, Melamed schus choizer melamed choiva. Then in fact he would be able to declare a reason that he's guilty, because at that point already he's gone through every possible svara, and if he can't think of any reason, if he realizes that I don't know what I was thinking when I first said that he was innocent, then fine, then he can change his mind now and say that he was guilty. So the Gemara says, Mesvi, I have a contradiction on Rav. Later on in our perek, when we talk about how the procedure of Dinin Nefoshes, how they discuss it and how they vote. Now we learned yesterday that we learned actually in the Mishnah that when it comes to Dinin Nefoshes, then you can't give the, if the verdict is going to be to convict the person, we can't do it on that same day. We have to delay the verdict until tomorrow, because we said we want them to sleep on it overnight and to come up maybe with more reasons to exonerate him. So the Mishnah later on says in the next parak, L'machras mashkim inuvoyin, the next morning all of them wake up and come early to the Beis Din Shtibel. Hamazaka Omer Ani Hamazaka. So each one who said that who was going to vote for him to be innocent says, I am the one who declares him innocent, or Mazaka Ani Bimkoimi, and I'm remaining in my place, meaning I'm remaining with the same position that I had before, that I declare him innocent. So in other words, he's saying, I, Reb Reuven, yesterday I was saying during the discussion that I believe him to be innocent, and today I'm sticking with that opinion. And whichever Dayan says, I'm Machayev, says, Ani Hamachayev, I am the one who yesterday was saying that he's Chayev, Machayev Ani B'mkoymi, and I continue to maintain that position that he's Chayev. And the Mishnah continues there, Amalamed Choyva, Malamed Schus. Any of the Dayanim who previously said Choyva can now say Schus. But the any dayan who said schus cannot change his mind now and say chayva. Now we're talking about the next day. So the Gemara asked, now when we're talking about the next day, on the face of it is already the Gemara Din. Because again, we said that on Sunday, for example, they're deliberating over it, and Monday morning they come there and they give the verdict. So we're already Monday morning, then we're talking about the Gemara Din. And yet we're saying that he can't change his mind, not like Rav. So the Gemara answers back, why? What's the problem? What are you thinking according to your svara that you're asking the question that the next day there couldn't also be maso matan? There could very well be. It could be. They ran out of time the day before. And now they're coming back the next day, not for the actual verdict, but rather to continue discussing it because they haven't yet come to a conclusion. So you could say that Mishnah in the next parak is talking about where there's still maso matan going on. And therefore, yes, at that point, even Rav agrees that somebody who was saying schus can't come and say choiva. But in other words, the Mishnah there does not have to be referring yet to Gemar Din. It's true at Gemar Din, we could say that he is entitled to change his mind, like Rav says. So no proof from that Mishnah one way or the other. Okay, the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring a proof from the continuation of the Mishnah. The Mishnah describes over there, now what happens if the Dayanim are deadlocked? So now, we said all this time that you have an odd number of Dayanim. We've been saying throughout the Masechta that you have an odd number of Dayanim to avoid a tie. But we said when it comes to Dinei Nefashos, you need a supermajority. You need a majority of at least two. So let's say, for example, they start out with a Beis Din of 23, and 12 of them are voting to convict, and 11 of them are voting to acquit. Well, we can't convict him because we don't have a supermajority. On the other hand, we can't really declare him innocent and let him go either. The fact is we have a majority against him. So therefore, what we have to do is we have to add two more dayanim, and they continue to discuss it. Now, if the two dayanim, if both of them break in one direction, then good. If one way or the other. So we started with 23, we were 12 to 11. If now the two new dayanim both agree that we should convict him, then we have 14 to 11. So we have a majority to convict. If the two of them are going to say that he's innocent, then fine. Then we have 13 innocent to 12 guilty, and then we can let him go. And we, if not, what happens if it's one? What happens if it's one and one? So then we're back to the same problem. We have 13 to convict, 12 to acquit. Still no good. So then we add another two, and we add another two. It keeps on describing until we reach 71. Ultimately we reach 71, and we can't go any higher than that. So what do we do in that case? What if we reach 71 and we still have 36 of them are saying to convict him and have him executed, and 35 are voting to acquit? So we still have the same problem. We can't convict him because we don't have a majority of two. We can't acquit him because we do have a majority. So therefore, the Mishnah says, "Don in elu k'neged elu." So what we have to start doing is they have to start arguing one against the other. Ad shiyira echad min ha-machayven divrei ha-mezakin, until one of those who previously said that he's chayev is going to say that, you know what, you have a point. Those of you who are saying mezakin, I see your point, and therefore I switch my vote. So in other words, what's going to happen in this case, let's say, is you're going to have, at this point, you have 36 to convict and 35 to acquit. We can't convict him. So now what we're going to do is we're going to start discussing it. Eventually, one of the 36 who says to convict is going to say, you know what, I changed my mind. You're right. You 35 who are saying to acquit have taka a good svara. After all, I accept it. Fine, I'm switching my vote. Now we have 36 to acquit, 35 to convict. Good. Case dismissed. Now we have 36. Now we have a majority to acquit. So therefore, good. You're free to go. That's what the Mishnah says. Now the im issa. If you're following what Rav says, where at the time of, and now here we're talking about Gemar Din. If you're going to tell me that at the time of Gemar Din, they have the ability to change their mind and to actually go from choiva to schus, listening nami ibcha, then the Mishnah should say the other possibility as well. You could equally well have, in a case like this, where one of the 35 who's saying to acquit says, you know what, I agree, taka, now with the 36 so far who are saying to convict, I'm changing my vote. Now we're going to have 37 to convict, 34 to acquit, and the guy is going to be guilty. Why doesn't the Mishnah mention that point? The fact that it doesn't mention it seems to imply because he can't do that. So not like Rav. The answer is no, because you could say Tana aschus kama hader, achoyva loy kama hader. No, because you could say the Tana wants to use lishna malya. He wants to use the nicer way of saying it, meaning, in other words, that we would rather, of course, either way is possible according to Rav. But if we're going to talk about what's going to happen, we would rather mention the positive possibility rather than the negative one, even though according to Rav, the negative possibility is also possible. That's how Rashi learns it. The Yad Rama learns it basically the same way. There's a different explanation from Rabbeinu David, who gives a different explanation. Listen, really, why are we saying Bechlal that we have to keep on discussing it? Once the fact is we didn't have a super majority to convict him. The fact is we only have 36 saying to convict, 35 to acquit. Why don't we just send him free? And that's that. The halacha is you need a majority of two to convict him, and you don't have. The reason is because later on the Gemara is going to explain the next Perek, that it's a gnai for Beis Din to do that. The fact is, it's not really right. I mean, it's a gnai for them to be deadlocked like that in a way where we can't, where on the one hand, where they're voting to convict him, but we can't actually do it. So the idea is, therefore, so Rabbeinu David explains our Gemara over here to be saying that, listen, if it's true, Taka, Rav is saying that one of them would have the ability to change his mind at the time of Gmar Din, but the purpose of the further discussion is primarily in order to be mezakeh him, to be able to say, you know what, given that we don't have that super majority against him, let's see. And now, as it is, if matters were to stay as is, we would Taka have to acquit him, as we're going to learn at the end of the next parak. We would rather, instead of having to acquit him on the grounds that, listen, we had a majority, but we didn't have a super majority, we would rather be able to acquit him by having Taka a clear majority in his favor, 36 to 35. So that's the purpose of it, which is why the Mishnah is focusing on that possibility, but not to say that a Taka couldn't be the other way around. So still no proof against Rav. Gemara continues, Toshma, the Amr of Yosi bar Chanina. Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina tells us that Echad me Talmidim Shezika. Now, we talked before about the Talmidim are able to speak up and say a reason to acquit the person. So now, Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina says that an interesting point, by the way, is usually Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina is an Amora. So in that case, then why are we asking from what he's saying on Rav? Rav is certainly allowed to disagree with him. The Rosh Hashanah points out, it seems there's a Tosfos elsewhere that mentions that Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina, who was a Tana. Therefore the Gemara can be asking from him on Rav. Anyway, so Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina says, Echad min ha-Talmidim shezika, if one of the Talmidim who were sitting in front of the Beis Din, if he said, I have a reason to declare the guy innocent, and then he passes away before the din Torah, before the case is done, royan oisa kilu chai, we consider that Talmud as though he was alive, and as though he's standing in his place. So in other words, we still count him towards the number of votes to acquit the person.
We don't have to ask him like why he came
well,
to respond.
We wanted to, but he passed away. There is in fact an explanation. There is in fact an explanation that we're talking about Taka, that all he said that all he says. Well, so the Ran brings like this. So some want to explain. We're talking about he just said Yeshli Lamed Schus and didn't even have a reason to give his reason yet. Didn't have a chance to give his reason yet. We would still say maybe he would have given the reason and therefore we can pat to him. The Ran says that's not what the Gemara means. It means that he gave a reason for his Schus and then he passed away. Then we still count him towards the Mezakim. It would have to be that he said his reason.
Even though reason could be a good reason or a bad reason.
Once he said the reason, then the Dayanim have to consider it. But in other words, we're saying if it was a good reason, then we still consider as though he's one of the votes to acquit. Anyway, so Royan Osek Kilo Chai V'Omrim Kaimer, we consider him as though he's still alive and standing in his place. That would be so with the Dayanim themselves. Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina, the Or HaNer points out, Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina is mentioning even one of the Talmidim. He's not one of the Dayanim yet. Nevertheless, but once he said a reason l'schus, and we're going to say later on that he counts therefore as a temporary Dayan, then therefore now that he said Yeshli Lamed of Schus, and as the Ran says, he has a reason, he gives a reason to he gives a reason behind it, then we're going to count him, even though he's not alive now. Anyway, so if I might, now the question is, according to Rav, why would we, Rav is saying, after all, when it comes to Gemar Din, any Dayan can change his mind, why should we count him automatically as a schus? Name it Ilu Havakayim Hodebe. We should say that if he was still alive, he might well have changed his mind. And because after all, according to Rav, he could change his mind at the time of Gemar Din. Now, to be sure, normally we would assume Hitzilua Eda, one we would assume that once he says a reason to acquit him, then he's not necessarily going to change his mind. But nevertheless, you could. In fact, Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz gives an example. What happens, for example, we talked about before, if there's a unanimous verdict against the person, then we're going to acquit him. So now you can have, let's say, all of them are saying unanimously against him, and now, if he changes it, if he taka says choiva as well, you're going to have a unanimous verdict in poitra moisoi. So he might want to taka consider to stick with his opinion mezaki moisoi. But the result of that is the person is going to be executed. You might think that maybe he wants to change his mind in order to find a way to acquit the person that way. And nevertheless, we say he can't do that. But again, according to Rav, he could. So why are we assuming automatically that he would be mezaka? So the Gemara says, "Hashnami aloi haldebe." The fact is, right now he didn't change his mind. We don't have to consider what he might have done. The fact is, now he didn't. Okay, the Gemara says, "V'hoshocho mitam." Still, what do you mean? How could you understand Rabbi Yosi b'Chanina's what Rabbi Yosi b'Chanina is saying? How could you understand it following what Rav says? How can you say that Rav could forenfer and make what he's saying work with what Rabbi Yosi b'Chanina says? They sent from there, from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, and which we said at the end of the first parak that when it says Shochem Itam means Rabbi Lazar, we said first in the Gemara that Shochem Itam means Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina sent the message. Then we said here we have they're saying according to Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina. So the Gemara changed its mind and said that no, Shochem Itam means Rabbi Lazar sent the message from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. Anyway, the message was L'divrei Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina, according to Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina, Mutsa Miklal Rabbeinu. That excludes what our Rebbe said, our Rebbe, meaning Rav, meaning in other words, Rabbi Lazar is informing the Chacham above. Oh, you should know what Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina clearly disagrees with what Rav says, and you're trying to fend for them to make them work together. But we see Rabbi Lazar clearly tells us that they're contradictory. The answer is ein mutze itmar. No, because actually you have the message a little wrong. What Rabbi Lazar actually sent a message is they're not a contradiction. Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina agrees. That he could change his mind afterward. They could change his mind when it comes to Gmar Din, even though he was previously said mezaka, he could change his mind and say mechayev, but only by Gmar Din, not during the discussion phase.
Because there's before, yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah. And the one of the Mefarshim, the Chamer of Achaya, says, I mean, how are you changing? You're adding the word ein to the message to flip around the meaning of it completely. He says basically the question is, did they say it as a statement or as a rhetorical question? Mutza miklal rav or mutza miklal rav? So therefore it would be the same words. Okay. Fine. The Gemara says, Tashma, let's bring another proof. Later on in our perek, we say Shnei Sofer Adayanin Omnim Lefnehem. When you have the Dayanim are deliberating over the Psak Din, then we have the two scribes of the Dayanim, the two court reporters, are standing in front of them. Echad mina yamin, echad mi yamin, ve'echad mina smol. One to the right and one to the left. The Sanhedrin themselves, as we're going to learn later on, they would sit in a semicircle so all of them can see each other. And in front of them, you have the two Sofer Adayanim standing and writing. So ve'echad min amin ve'echad masmel ve'kosvin divrama zaken ve'divrama chayvin. They would write down for each of the dayanim what they said, what their vote was so far, and what the reason is behind what they're saying. The point of it being that this way, in case one of them forgets what he says, then he can reconstruct it from what was written down. And the reason why we need two sefer dayanim, Rashi explains later on, is basically as a check on one another. This way, if there's a mistake in one of the transcripts, then we can correct it from the other one. The Meiri actually learns differently. The Meiri learns that one of them would write the Mezakin, and the other one would write the Mechayvin. Whatever the case, the point is, We find, by the way, in other places, there's Yerushalmis and the Midrashim that imply that those sofer, we're not stopping talking court reporters, stenographers. These people themselves were distinguished Talmid Chachamim themselves. Ad Kedekach, there's places where it talks about that they may even be counted as almost like honorary members of the Sanhedrin themselves. There's psukim at the end of Malachim and at the end of Yirmiyah that talk about Nevuzer Adon arresting and executing the members of the Sanhedrin. And there's one place where it mentions five, and another it mentions seven. And the Yerushalmi that says that the difference is the two sofer adayanim. Anyway,
but they can't take sides because
they can't take sides. But nevertheless, they're still
right.
I'm saying we're not just saying they hire them because they can write fast. We hire them for the job because they're distinguished Talmid Chachamim themselves who are capable of being members of the Sanhedrin. But right now they're serving as court reporters. Well, the Gemara says, "Bishleba divrei mechayvin." I understand why we need to write down what the people who want to make him guilty are saying. Because after all, we said if they're going to give a guilty verdict, we have to leave it over for the next day. So therefore, so we have to write it down. We have to write it down on the first day of the deliberations, even though they can change their mind. We need to know the reasons behind everything they said. Because if one of them is going to say, one of them might say, you know what, I realize the original reason why I was going to convict him is not really a valid reason, but I have a different reason also to convict him. So therefore, so we need that information written down in order that he'll remember. And the point is also, Rashi says, suppose that now one of the Dayanim says, or many of the Dayanim say, let's say, you know what, we realize the original reasons we had to convict him are not good, but we have other reasons also to convict him, then we're going to need Halonas Din another day. We're going to need to hold over the verdict for another day, because again, we have to have the verdict can never be on the, if it's going to be guilty, can never be on the same day as the deliberations. So therefore, we need to write down the Divrei HaMechayvin in order to keep that kind of thing clear. So the point is, Lamocha Chozer Time Achrina, because the next day they may realize a different reason, or Bolamevat Halonas Din, and as we said, we have to leave over the judgment, we have to leave over the verdict for the next day. Ela Divram Zakin my timer, but why should the court reporters have to write down Divram Zakin? If they're able to change their mind, the point is, if Rav's saying they can change their mind at the end, what's the point of writing it down? If you're gonna tell me they're writing it down because in order for the deliberations tomorrow, you don't need to. You can just write that Pliny was Mazaka. You're telling me that all this time during the deliberation, once he says Mazaka, he can't change his mind. So there's no reason to write down why he said Mazaka. He can't change his mind anyway. And if you're talking about when it comes to Gemar Din, if Rav is telling us that he could change his mind, then again, what would be the point of writing down the reason why he said originally Mazaka? Now he can change his mind without giving a reason at all. So it must be fakir. The Mishnah must be so my time alav mishum de'i chozu time achrin alachoyva lemashkechin and bahu. Evidently, it must be. We have to write down the reason why he said mizaka is because if later on he wants to change his mind, even at the time of gemar din, and say, you know, I see a reason to convict him, then we're not going to allow him to. And we could now we could even have, in other words, they have to write down. So what do we have to do? We have to make sure that the Dayanim are not going to say, you know what, I realize the reason that I was saying to exonerate him is like we learned about yesterday, because I realized that I was basing myself on Dovashat Tzdukim Moidim, by I'd forgotten a simple thing in Chumash that even the Tzdukim would agree to, and therefore I want to change my mind. But on the face of it, we're saying we don't allow it. So what's the point of writing down Divrei HaMezakin? So that seems to show not like Rav. That's how Rashi explains. Tosfos asks on that fakert. Then in that case, that should be a reason to write it, even if we follow Rav's shitta, because we would say because precisely that during the maso matan, fine, during the gemar din, he can't change his mind, but during the maso matan, during the discussion, he could say, I realized I missed out something. Dovashat zduki moidim boy. But Tosfos says, listen, I mean, after all, there's not really such, when it comes to exonerating or convicting the person, it's not really going to make that much of a difference. The point is, we want to look for a schus for him. So therefore, that's not a reason to go and write down, to have to go and bother the Sofer HaDayanim to write down the reason, if anyway, Bishas Gmar did, he could change his mind for any reason. If you're going to say he can't change his mind, then there's a good reason to write it down, because then yes, he may realize that the reason that he said to acquit is flawed because it was Davashat's Dukin Modim Bay. And then we're going to tell him, listen, you can't change your mind and say Lachoiva anyway, go find a better reason to acquit him, not Davashat's Dukin Modim Bay. But if you're going to say that he could change it, Tosfos explains the question. If you could say that at Gmar Din he could change his mind anyway, then what's the point of writing it down anyway? Doing Masto Matan, he can't change his mind, even if it was Davashat's Dukin Modim Bay. When it comes to Gmar Din, according to Ravi Kur, so what's the point of writing down the Divrei HaMezakin then?
Guys, why can't you write that? Why can't you change your mind during Masna Matan?
Because we're saying we said once he said something in favor of the person, then he can't, because Rashi had said before, once he said a reason to favor him, to acquit him, we want him to try and back up that reason. We want him to try and find more and more reasons to say that consideration was valid after all. And therefore that'll be another vote to acquit him, which we would rather. On the other hand, when it comes to Gmar Din, where everything has already been discussed, pro and con, and he's saying, you know what, I really can't understand what I was thinking in the first place to acquit him, then Rav is saying that he can vote to convict. But now we're discussing Rav's point. So why should we have to write the Divrei HaMezakin? So the Gemara says, Loi, no, the reason why we have to write the Divrei HaMezakin, Kadesh lo yomu shnayim tam echad mishnei mikrois. The reason is because we want to make sure that you don't have two dayanim are saying two different psukim with one reason to acquit him. Meaning, in other words, as the Gemara is going to go on to discuss now, there's no extra psukim in the Torah. You never have, as the Gemara is going to explain now, you never have two psukim that teach us the exact same point. So if you have two psukim that seemingly teach us the same point, then it means that one of the dayanim is mistaken, is misunderstanding how to use the yud gimel midas shatur in adreshes behem. So that's why we need to write down the Divrei HaMezakin, not because they can't change their mind by gmar din. They could, but we want to make sure when we have however many votes to acquit, did every one of them have a different reason, a different pasuk and a different svara to say a reason to acquit, rather than you're going to have, as the Gemara is going to discuss now, you're going to have one is saying, I say that there's a reason to acquit him based on this pasuk, which I darshan in a certain way, and another one is going to say, no, I darshan the same point from a different pasuk. Well, then we have to say one of them is mistaken, because there's no way that two psukim are telling us the exact same drasha. As in fact, the Gemara says, "Kidibomine Rab Asi mir Rab Yechanan." As we find, in fact, that Rab Asi asked Rab Yechanan, "Omru shnayim tam echad mishnei mikrois mahu." What would happen if two different dayanim give the same reason, but based on two different pesukim? What would be the din? Amalei, so Rabbi Yechanan says, no, ein moinin lehen al echad, then those two dayanim count as only one, because it means that one of them is mistaken in how to darshan the pasuk, because there'd be no reason for the Torah to write two pesukim to tell us the same thing. So the Shach actually points out that would only be by dinin nefoshes. He says maybe by dinin momenes that doesn't apply. Also, he says we're not talking about when it's not a matter of droshes of sukim, when it's a matter of each one gives a different svara, then we would, even though it's the same psak, then we would still count them as two. We're talking about only, we're saying that, for example, as the Gemara is going to give examples over here, each of them is saying the exact same concept based on different psukim. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Minohani mili." Where do we know this from? Amar Abaye, Dr. Amar Kro. The pasuk says, "Achas dibri alekim." Hashem has spoken one thing. Shnayim zushamoti. I heard two. Meaning, in other words, that Hashem can tell us one thing in a pasuk, and we can learn two different things from it. Ki ois lelekim, because Hashem has strength. So we learn from that. Mikra echad yoytzel kama taimim. You can have one pasuk from which we learn many different concepts. That in tam echad yotz mikam mikrois, you're not going to have two psukim that teach us the exact same thing, because that would be repetitiousness by Hashem, and Hashem's not going to repeat for no reason. So meaning of what Marsha says, the point is, in other words, that a person doesn't have that kind of oiz. So a person might well have that he says that he repeats himself for no particular reason, but Hashem doesn't do that. That wouldn't be part of Hashem's chokhmah to do that. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they learned a different way of saying the same concept, of learning that concept that here, ironically, you have they're learning from two different psukim, this concept that two psukim are not repetitious. Anyway, the pasuk says, Uchafatish yifoitzit sola, that the words of Hashem are like a hammer that shatters a rock. Just like a hammer breaks up and divides into many sparks. of fragments. The same way one pasuk can be divided up, can be can come in, and we can douse in from many different levels of understanding in Torah. Tosfos discusses over here and in several and in a few other places in Shas where it brings this pasuk. Tosfos discusses that on the face of it, we're saying the hammer shatters the rock. So what do you mean, mischalik l'kamenitzotis? What do you mean that it divides into many sparks? It's not the hammer that divides into fragments; it's the rock that does. So, so Tosfos brings a girsa from the Rashbam that it's supposed to be mechalik. And then Tosfos says another possibility is that it means sometimes you have such a hard rock that you bang on it with a hammer, and it's not the rock that shatters; it's the hammer. And then, and it brings from a medrash about that, that somebody took sanpirinun, sapphire or whatever, or something like that, and it was so hard that it shattered the hammer. A different explanation is also that it means that the hammer, when it strikes the rock, it, a lot of sparks fly off the metal of the hammer. So Marashah discusses this at some length over here and points out that also the word sela over here may not be a rock. The word sela can also mean a coin, as in the Selah coin that we have throughout Shas. So he explains that here that we have now in other places, there's places in the Gemara where the Gemara compares that where the Gemara uses the same pasuk to refer to the Yetzer Hara. You bang on the Yetzer Hara with the hammer of Torah, and it breaks the Yetzer Hara up into pieces. So Marsha explains over here to say that you can have it can also mean there that the Selah again can be the Yetzer Hara, that you bang on the coin and you give it a new shape that it didn't have before. In the same way, you're able to transform the Yetzer Hara. Interestingly, on this week's parasha, we actually have Rashi brings this expression in Rashi at the beginning of the parasha. After he discusses the meaning of the first few psukim, he brings that there's a drosha in the medrash that explains the first few psukim of our parasha, and Rashi says the words of Hashem are kaloi koi dvori ka'esh nu Hashem chafate shifotzit sala. This pasuk over here that v'hadrosha tidorish. Rashi says the drosha has to be daushin, but we still have pshuta shomikra. There's a fascinating sicha in chelik chafalif where the Rebbe analyzes why Rashi brings that point over here and what's this expression of Rashi v'hadrosha tidorish. Basically, the Rebbe says in that particular case you have the pshat itself of the pasuk requires that there has to be a drasha over here as well. There's something so obviously lacking in the pshat that you need the drasha as well. But Rashi brings that same expression over here as if to say, in other words, the pasuk itself is implying that you have to have sparks flying off it, going in different directions, because otherwise you're not going to completely understand that according to pshat. So we see, in other words, the point is, according to either Durasha, the point is that you're not going to have, that you can have one posik from which we learn many different concepts, but not the other way around. Therefore, again, if two of the Dayanim say, I have a reason to say, for example, that he should be potter because I doubt in this posik a certain way, and another person says, I agree with that Durasha, but I doubt in it from a different posik, nope, then we say one of them has to be making a mistake. Well, the Gemara says, Heichi dami tam echad mishnei mikros. Give us an example of this. Of this tam echad mishnei mikros. Amar Rav Zvid k'detnan. So Rav Zvid said, I'll give you an example from a mishnah in Zvachim. We'll learn it next year, best Hashem, around this time. Mizbeach mekadesh es haroi loy. The mizbeach is mekadesh things that are suitable for it. Meaning the posik says, now the posik says about the mizbeach, kone geir ba mizbeach yikdosh. Anything that touches the mizbeach becomes holy. So from that we learn a basic concept that when you have something which would have been suitable for the mizbeach, but it has a certain psul in it, nevertheless, this is the concept called im olo la yered. If it's brought up to the mizbeach, you don't take it down. So what kind of things are we talking about? Rabbi Yeshua makola roi la ishim im olo la yered. Rabbi Yeshua says anything that's suitable to be offered on the fires of the mizbeach, then if it goes up to the Mizbeach, then you don't take it down. Shenema ha'oila al-mokta, because the pasuk says, the oila on the fire. Ma oila shiru oila ishim. Now an oila is something suitable to be burnt on the fire. Im also leiterer, and therefore if you have, so suppose you have an oila which got a psul in it afterwards. Let's say, for example, the animal wasn't a balmum or anything like that. It was fine as an oila. But then let's say, for example, he shechted it. Let's say, for example, he shechted it with the wrong intention. Or let's say, for example, the blood was, let's say the shchita, the blood spilled, or the shchita took place on the south side of the Azara, or whatever, various cases like that called psulei b'kodesh. So then, so just like an oila is roila ishim, also like teira, and if it goes up, it doesn't come down. Af kol sho roila ishim, the same thing. Anything else that was supposed to, that could have been at some point, it had a shasa kosher, it was capable of being put on the fire of the mizbeach. Im ola la yera, then if it goes up to the mizbeach, you don't bring it down. Meaning, in other words, for example, as opposed to, let's say, the animal was a balmum, it had no business being brought as a korban in the first place. Or let's say an example, another example of ein roila ishim would be, for example, the pieces of a shlamim. You have the fats of the shlomim are supposed to be burned on the mizbeach, but the rest of the pieces are not. So those we would say, Rabbi Yeshua would say, "Im ola yered." Rabbi Gamliel, "I'm a koloroy the mizbeach im ola yered." Rabbi Gamliel says anything that's suitable for the mizbeach, if it goes up to the mizbeach, doesn't come down. Shenema hi ha oila mukdal mizbeach, because the pasuk says it is the oila on the burning place on the mizbeach. Which he learns, ma oila shiru oila gavam mizbeachim also leiterid. So again, he says the same idea, just like an oila, which is suitable for the mizbeach, if it goes up, doesn't come down. Af kol shu roila mizbeachim ola leiterid. The same way anything else, which is roila mizbeach, if it goes onto the mizbeach, it doesn't come down.
Same thing about Shlomo, I guess.
Well, so in other words, the point is, so what is it? So 1 second. So in other words, so Rabbi Yeshua is learning from the word ha'oila. Rabbi Gamliel is learning from the word moikta. So now on the face of it, my komarbu psulin. Now both of them are adding that there are various cases of psulin. For example, if the korban was shechted in the wrong place or with a wrong machshava or whatever, my ma'isila mi moikta or my ma'isila mi mizbeach. So one is so Rabbi Gamliel is learning from the word moikta, and Rabbi Yeshua is learning from the word mizbeach. Or the other way around, Rabbi Yeshua is learning from Moikta, and Rabbi Gamliel is learning from the word Mizbeach. So that would be an example of Tam Echad Mishnei Mikros. The Pasuk didn't write the words Moikta and Mizbeach for nothing, so it has to be on the face of it. Either Rabbi Yeshua or Rabbi Gamliel is misunderstanding the Pasuk, and we're meant to darshan something else from it. So that would be an example of Mikra Echad, of Tam Echad Mishnei Mikros. But the Gemara says no. Because you can't say that. The fact is, it's not just a machloikas of how to douche in the posik. They actually have a practical machloikas in halacha that comes out from their two drushas. Dekotani sefer, because the sefer of the Mishnah continues. Ein ben divrei Rabbi Gamliel ledivrei Rabbi Yeshua. What is the actual difference between what Rabbi Gamliel and what Rabbi Yeshua is saying? Ela hadam v'hanesachim, only regarding the blood of korbanos and nesachim. Which the blood is not, it doesn't go on the fire, but it goes on the mizbeach. The nesachim also don't go on the fire; they get poured into the bowls over there at the top of the mizbeach. Now, Rabbi Gamliel, who's learning from the word mizbeach, he says anything that goes on the mizbeach. Therefore, he would say the blood also, if it became posel, let's say it became tameh, he would say still sprinkle it on the mizbeach. It's not something leishim; doesn't matter. He's not learning from the word moikta, which means the burning. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua says you would take them down because the fact is they don't belong in the fire of the mizbeach, and he's learning from the word moikta. So therefore, so you can't say it's tamach or mishnei mikros. The fact is they have an actual machloikas in halacha about what to learn from. Each one, fine, is going to have something to learn from the other one's pasuk, but they're not both learning the same concept from two different words in the pasuk, which would be a problem. Each one is saying, I have my word from which I learn my din, and what I'm going to do with your other word, we'll deal with in zvachim. So that's not a good example. Ela Omer Papa Kedetanya. So the Papa says, fine, I'll bring you like a braisa also regarding this matter of Im Olo Lo Yerdu, where you have like this. Braisa says, Rabbi Yisag Lilium, Mitoch Shenem Akona Geva Mizbeach Yikdosh. The Pusik says, anything that touches the Mizbeach becomes holy. Shemeani Ben Roy Ben Shein Roy. So you would think that means whether the thing is suitable for the Mizbeach to begin with. So in other words, maybe even. So maybe even, for example, it would include, let's say, Rashi gives several examples. Let's say it might include Sa'ur or Dvash. We know the Pasuk says, Ki chol Sa'ur v'chol Dvash le'sektidim imenu. You're not allowed to bring sourdough or honey as a korban. Maybe, though, the Pasuk is saying, Kol anegei b'mizbeach, b'dievet. You put him on the mizbeach, then you leave him over there. Maybe it would include, for example, wild animals. Maybe it would include chulin. So no, Talmud lema kvasim. Therefore, the pasuk says kvasim. You have to put lambs on the mizbeach for the korban talmud. So therefore, ma kvasim ruuyin af kol roi. The same way as the lambs for the korban ola. And the reason is because the next pasuk continues. The pasuk is kol negev mizbeach yikdash. The next pasuk continues v'zeh shatasa al mizbeach. The following is what you should bring on the mizbeach. Kvasim, you should bring sheep for the korban talmud. So we learn from that, therefore, what do we mean? Only things that are similar to the kvasim for the tamid. Just like kvasim are something suitable to bring on the mizbeach. So even if they became posel afterwards, im olu lo yerdu af kol roi. The same thing when we're going to say kol negeim on mizbeach yikdash has to be something which to begin with had a period, had a shasa kosher, had a period when it was suitable to go on the mizbeach. That's Rabbi Yisai Glili. Rabbi Akiva oima oila. Rabbi Akiva learns instead from the word oila in that same pasuk. Where he says, Ma oila ru'uya af kol roi, just like an oila is something that was suitable for the Mizbeach, and the same thing, anything else, same olola yered. So again, v'tavayu mai kumamatu. So now both of them, what are they both being memayit from their respective words, kvosim oila, psuli. They're both being memayit something which is possible. So ma maisulam kvosim, ma maisulam oila. So one is learning from the word kvosim, and one is learning from the word oila. Mind you, it doesn't actually say the word oila in that pasuk. It just says zesh to ashatas on the back kvasim b'neishana. So there's discussion which word oila we're referring to. But the point is, in other words, that the point is that we see on the face of it, both of them are learning from two different words in a pasuk or two different psukim, and they're learning the same concept. Because on the face of it, whatever Rabbi Yisai Glili would say im ola yered, Rabbi Akiva also says, and vice versa. So that would be an example of two reasons of one concept. Based on two different psukim. The Gemara says no.
That's the same pasuk?
It doesn't. It's different words in the pasuk. It doesn't matter whether it's the same pasuk or different words in the same pasuk. Whatever. The kvasim or oila. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says no, because again we have an actual machloikus between them. There is an actual nafkamina between them as far as an oila sa'oif, which is possible. So suppose the bird was originally brought to the Beis Mikdash to be brought as a korban ola, and now before they had a chance to offer it on the mizbeach, it got some kind of psul. So it's a manda ma'isilam kvasim. Rabbi Yosi Aglili, who learns from the word kvasim, then he would say kvasim ein or aval oila sa'if loy. So therefore, he would say the pasuk is only referring to animals such as kvasim. So therefore, he would say oila sa'if is excluded. So this oila sa'if would not go on the mizbeach because it's possible. And even if it did, then we would take it down because not in the same category as kvasim. Umanda ma'isilam oila. Whereas Rabbi Akiva, who learns from oila, would say afilo oila sa'if. The fact is, an oila sa'if is still an oila. So we have an actual nafkamina between them. So again, Rabbi Akiva is going to have to do something with the word kvasim. Rabbi Yosef Aglili is going to have to do something with the word oila. But it's not one reason based on two different psukim or two different words from psukim that we should say one of them made a mistake. So again, that's not a good example. Rather, Ravashi says here, we have a braisa. I'll give you an illustration from a braisa. Here we have, we're not going to talk about korbanos, but rather a different angle of korbanos called shchutei chutz. We know the Torah tells us you're not allowed to offer korbanos outside the Beis Mikdash, and a person who does that is chayiv kares. So now you have like this. The pasuk says, "Dom yechoshev la'ishahu." The pasuk says if a person offers a korban outside the shechts a korban outside the Beis Mikdash, "Dom yechoshev la'ishahu," it will be considered as though for that person as though he killed a person. He's chayiv misa. "Dom shofach," he has spilled blood, and therefore he gets kares. So now, why do we have to add the words dom shofach? L'rabbis is a zerdik. Those words dom shofach come to include somebody who sprinkles the blood of kodshim outside. Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Shmuel would say not only is a person who shechts a korban outside the Beis Mikdash chayiv kares, but also let's say somebody else shechted it, or let's say he shechted it inside and then he took the blood and sprinkled it outside. Rabbi Shmuel says also he would be chayiv kares. Where do we know that from the word dom shofach? Rabbi Akiva says, no, we learn from a couple of psukim later, when it says, oi zavach, the pasuk says, when a person brings outside the Beis Mikdash an oila or a zevach, so from the words, oi zevach, l'rabbis zazorik, then it comes to include somebody who sprinkles the blood. Now, v'tavayu ma'ikom marbu, what are they both adding? Zrika, they're both adding, that the pasuk doesn't explicitly mention, but they're both adding that if a person sprinkles blood of a korban outside the Beis Mikdash, he's chayiv kares. Outside the azara, he's chayiv kares. Ma ma'isila midom yechoshu, ma ma'isila mi'oy zavach. Now they're learning from two different psukim. So therefore, shouldn't that be an example where we would say that it's tam echad from shnei mikrois, and it means that it can't both be correct. The Gemara says no, because again, no, because Rabbi Abahu said that actually the nafkamina between them would be what if the same person both shechted the animal and sprinkled the blood. Now let's say so if it's b'mei zedis, look, you can only be mechayiv and kares once. But what if it was b'shoigig and he's going to have to bring a chatas? Is he bringing one chatas or two? So the divi Rabbi Shmuel ain't a chayiv alachas. According to Rabbi Shmuel, who holds that we learn it, that we learn Zodik from the posik about shoychet ain't a chayiv alachas, then he's chayiv only one chatas because it's both it's two sub branches of the same issur that he did. The divi Rabbi Akiva chayiv shayim. Whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, he would be chayiv two chatos because Rabbi Akiva is learning them from two completely different psukim. So in other words, even though there are Rashi points out, even though it says twice chorus in the psukim, but you have only one azhara, you have only one warning, don't do this. Therefore, Rabbi Shmuel is saying there's only one chatas, and Rabbi Akiva would say that there are two. So again, it's not tam echad mishnei mikros because there's a practical difference between them and halacha. Well, the Gemara answers back. Ha'itman Allah. Yeah, but you realize there was also said on that. Omar Abaya, after the divrei Rabbi Akiva nami ein chayv al achas. No, Abaya disagrees with Rabbi Bohu. Rabbi Bohu had said that there's this nafkamina. Abaya says no. Even according to Rabbi Akiva, he'd be chayv only one chatos. Do amakros shom tal ol esecha v'shom tasa. Because the pasuk says there in the Beis Hamikdash, you should bring your oilus, and there you should do all the other things that I told you. Meaning avinu rachmana l'cholu asiyas by putting in that v'shom Tasa, the Pasuk is combining together all the different doings, meaning all the different actions that happen in connection with one korban. The Pasuk is saying ultimately they're considered only one Isser, and therefore there's only one Chiyuv Kores, and therefore only one Chiyuv of a Chatas. So at least according to Abaya, then fine. So at least according to Abaya, it comes out that there, in fact, the machloikas of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva would in fact be an example of tam echad mishnei mikrois. And according to Abaya, therefore, we would say if this kind of thing were to come up in the Sanhedrin and Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva were to argue about it, we would say we would count it only as one opinion because the fact is that we can't have two different psukim teaching us the exact same thing. So that's what we mean by tam echad mishnei mikrois. Next, the Mishnah had continued dinim mominis donin by yoyim v'chola. We said that dinim mominis can be judged by day. The actual maso matan takes place by day, but then we said that the gemar din can take place even at night. On the other hand, we said when it comes to dinim nefashas, both the discussion and the verdict have to take place by day. So simon mishpat ma'anim mates. So the Gemara has a simon over here for the next three things that we're going to discuss in the Gemara over here on this subject. This is three things. Usually, when we have a simon in the Gemara, is usually things one after the other. But here, Maharsha says this is actually a simon for three different statements by Rab Acha Bar Papa, which the Gemara is going to bring over the next couple of blot. Once in a while, you have a simon like that. Where it's across the whole Masechta or across a whole sugya rather than just in one place, one after the other. So Amar Rab Chiya Bar Papa. Where do we know this from? That by Dinim Mominus, you can finish up the Din Torah and give the verdict by night. Because the Pasuk says, V'shoftu asa'am b'chol eis. Yisro, it tells Moshe that the Dayanim that you appoint should judge the people at all times. At all times means by night. So the Gemara says, Yehochi tchilas din nami. Well, then by that logic, they should be able to start the Din Torah by night as well. And the Mishnah had said that not. And the answer is Kidirava. The reason why you can't is based on what Rava said. The Rava Rami, Rava pointed out a seeming stira between the Psukim. One Pasuk says they should judge the people at all time, implying even at night. But we have a Pasuk that says, on the day that a person bequeaths his Yerusha to his children. Now that's an example, that's Nachlois, that's an example of Mishpat, where you're deciding which of the Yerushim gets what. And that's an example of Mishpat, and the Pasuk says V'yoyim, implying that it has to take place by day. Okay, so how do we reconcile? Yom L'tchilas Din, Laila L'gmar Din. The day has to be when you start the Din Torah. The night can be when you finish off the Din Torah. Now, Tosfos points out the beginning of the din is obviously more important. So therefore, we're not going to say the other way around. We can begin the din Torah by night and we have to finish it by day because we can say that, so Rashi actually says it's more logical to say When it says Rashi says like this, when it says v'shoftu, the v'shoftu implies the gemar din and the pasuk is saying b'chol eis. So therefore, that would mean the nighttime is when you can do the v'shoftu, the actual verdict. Tosva says the other way around, kind of the tchilas din, the main din is the main thing, and therefore it's more logical that takes place by day. And also the words b'yom hanchiloi implies when we accept the edim, when Beis Din listens to the edim who say what the shchiv menah planned as far as the distribution of his nechus. And the Kabbalah Se'edus, when we listen to the Edom, that would be like the Tchilas Din. So either way, we learn that the Tchilas Din has to be by day, and then the Gemara, however, the Gemara Din can be by night. Now the Gemara points out Masnis in the like Rav Meir. Our Mishnah then is not going like Rav Meir. The Tanya Hoy Rav Meir Omer Ma Tamalema Piyam Yiko Rivachol Noga. The Pasuk says that on their word, meaning according to the Dayanim, should be every argument in Dinim Mominus and every Nega, every case of Negoyim. So Vchimayin in Rivimates on Negoyim. What is arguments in Dinim Mominus having to do with Negoyim or with Saras? Tzaras, especially, is seen by the Kohen. It has nothing to do with the Beis Din per se. Ella, makish rivim l'negoyim, it means we have a hekesh between arguments in dinim mamonos and negoyim. Ma negoyim vayoyim, just like negoyim can be seen only by day. And we know that dechtiv because the pasuk says over yoyim heirois boy, on the day when they're seen in a metzora, one of the symptoms of tzaras. Af rivim by yom, the same way arguments and dinim mamonos have to be davka by day. Uman negoyim shaloi besumin, and further says Rav Meir, just like negoyim have to be seen only by a kohen who is not blind, because if he's blind, and that means not even blind in one eye. Dichtiv lachomare ene a kohen. Because the pasuk describes in all the sight of the eyes of the kohen, so the kohen has to be able to see the tzaras with both eyes. So the mayor says af rivim shaloi besumin, the same way rivim, the same way dinim mamonos cannot be judged by dayanim who are blind. And so we're learning from negoyim to rivim, and continues the mayor umakish negoyim lerivim, and vice versa. We also have the hekish going the other way that we learn from rivim to negoyim. Ma rivim shaloi b'kroivim, just like dinim mamonos cannot be judged by relatives, as we learned in the previous perek. Af negoyim shaloi b'kroivim, the same way says Rav Meir, negoyim cannot be seen by relatives. The halacha, by the way, is not like that point. The halacha, as far as that one, is that negoyim can actually be seen by a relative. Rashi mentions on the pasuk, for example, when Miriam got tzaras, that Aaron was saying, "Well, what's going to happen over here? I'm the only kohen around, and I'm her brother, and I can't see the negoyim." And Hashem says, "Therefore, I'll be metame her, and I'll be metare her." But the halacha is actually not like that. Anyway, so. And continues Rav Meir, e ma rivim b'shloisha af negoyim b'shloisha. Well, then you're going to say, if you're going to continue the hekesh, just like rivim, just like dinim mamonos have to be judged by a beis din of three, maybe you're going to say negoyim to see tzaras and give a verdict on it also has to be three koyanim. The dinhu, and in fact, you would think to make a kavachomer to say that mamoina b'shloisha gufoy lekol shagin. If when it comes to a matter of his money, you need three dayanim, how much more so tzaras, which has to do with his actual guf. So why don't we do that? Talmud Leiman, no, because the pasuk says v'huva el Aaron Akoyin el oyel achad v'goyim. The pasuk says that the mitzora, the suspected mitzora, is brought to Aaron Akoyin or to one of his sons. Halamat the shafir the koyin achad royas and a goyim. So from there you learn that one koyin can see a goyim. But the point is, we have a hekesh according to the mayor, saying that negoyim can, because negoyim can be seen only by day, and rivim can be done only by day as well. So we see, therefore, our Mishnah on the face of it is not like Rav Meir, because our Mishnah apparently is not like Rav Meir, because according to Rav Meir, the full din Torah, including even the Gemara din, would have to take place by day. Well. Having mentioned the point that a blind person can't judge dinim mamonos, according to the mayor, so the Gemara brings, Hahu Samya, there was a blind person. He was actually only blind in one eye. So this blind Talmud Chacham, Dehavya b'shiva vuse, he lived in Rabbi Yechanan's neighborhood. Dehavya doyin dina, he was judging dinim mamonos v'loy omalei Rabbi Yechanan v'loy midi. Rabbi Yechanan didn't tell him anything. Rabbi Yechanan did not object that he's not allowed to. So it doesn't say in the Gemara over here that he was blind only in one eye. The Rif, when he brings the story, says that he was blind in one eye. Because if he was blind in both eyes, then Taka, you have a different Mishnah in Masech the Nida that would imply that he can't. And with that said, though, the Tosfos elsewhere learns that no, even actually, if he's blind in both eyes, he could still do Dinim Ominous, because Reb Meir would say that he's possible, but the Chachamim would say that he's kosher. They don't hold of that Hekesh that we said before. But anyway, the Rif has the Girsa, and then the Ramban says apparently this is the correct Girsa in the Gemara that he was blind in one eye. Anyway, so Rabbi Yechanan wasn't telling him anything to object. The question is, Heichi Ovid Hochi, how could Rabbi Yechanan do that and not tell him that you're not allowed to? Va'om Rabbi Yechanan halacha k'stam mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan himself says that the halacha is like a stam mishnah utnan, and we learn in a mishnah in Masechta Nida, kol a kosher lodun kosher lahayid. Anybody who's kosher to judge cases on a beis din is also automatically also kosher to give edus. The yesh kosher lahayid vein kosher lodun, but vice versa, you can have somebody who's kosher to give edus but not to be a dayan. It's part of a series of Mishnayos over there in Masechta Nida that points out you have a series over there, the first one being something relevant to Hilchos Nida or to the Halachos over there, that all A or B, but not all B or A. So as the Mishnah often does, it mentions several other such examples. So for Amar Rabbi Yechanan points out last suya summa ba'achas me'enam, that Mishnah comes to include somebody who's blind in one eye. He's kosher to give edus, but he's possible to judge a din Torah, like Reb Meir had said. So how is Rabbi Yechanan not telling this person that you can't judge dinim ominous? The answer is Rabbi Yechanan stama achrita ashkach, because Rabbi Yechanan found another stam mishnah that contradicts that one. Our mishnah dinim ominous done in bayom v'gomer b'layla. We're saying in our mishnah that dinim ominous, you can start the din Torah by day and finish it by night. So now, according to the mayor, we just said that would be no good. And yet our Mishnah is saying that that's fine to do. And Rashi also adds, doing it at night is similar to a blind person, meaning, in other words, that you have people, the Rif goes and explains further. You have people who are, even people who are normally sighted, are able, obviously, to see less by night than they can by day. And nevertheless, if the Mishnah says that you can do the Gemar Din by night, then the same way someone who is blind in one eye would be able to judge even by day, because, after all, he's able to see more than a Dayan, than a healthy Dayan who doesn't see by night. Now that's a point of the Rif. The Baal HaMor disagrees with the Rif on that and explains differently that our Mishnah is obviously disagreeing with Reb Meir, like we said before, so we don't use that Hekesh at all, like that Reb Meir had said, that it should be possible to judge Rivim, and therefore the result is that he should be kosher. And there's more discussion about that pro and con. But anyway, the point is that Rabbi Yochanan learns from our Stam Mishnah that such a person would be kosher. Well, the Gemara says, my Omer, the high stomach, my high stomach. Fine, but if according to Rabbi Yochanan, the halacha is like a Stam Mishnah, then why is our Stam Mishnah any stronger than the one in Nida? The Gemara says, he both say, my stomach, the Rabbim, Adif. First of all, because the Stam Mishnah, which is according to the Deya of the Rabbim, is better. That Mishnah in Nida would be only according to the Meir, because we said he learns that Hekesh that we said. Our Mishnah, a Stam Mishnah, would be according to the Chachamim, who disagree and don't hold of that Hekesh. If we're going to have a Stam Mishnah that reflects the opinion of the Rabbim, more likely to accept that one. Another reason would be because our Mishnah is in connection with the halachas of the Dayanim. Our Mishnah is where it belongs. The Mishnah in Nidah is agav etz yahav, various other cases that it mentions over there, that all A or B, but not all B or A, so incidentally it mentions this also. But something incidental like that is not as strong as a Mishnah in the place where it belongs, here in Masechta Sanhedrin, where we're dealing with the qualifications of Dayanim. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan figures that it's more logical that we should accept our Stam Mishnah as the given one according to which we pass in the halacha. Okay. The Gemara says, "V'Rav Meir Hai V'Shoftu Asa Om B'Chalais Mai Dorish Bei." Well, we said before we have the pasuk that says they can judge the people at all times. We said that's where we learn that the Gemara Din can be by night. If according to the Meir, on the other hand, we have a Hekish saying that you can only judge Dine Torah and complete them by day, then what is he doing with the words V'Shoftu Asa Om B'Chalais? The answer is Amar Rav L'Isui Yomem Unan. It comes to include a cloudy day. You're allowed to have a din Torah on a cloudy day. Now, a cloudy day is not a suitable day to see Negoyim, because you have to be able to see the Nega clearly in the sunlight, but nevertheless, you can have a din Torah then. To that extent, we don't do that Hekish. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah, Masechta Negayim. Ein Roynes and Goyim B'Shachris. The Kohenim cannot see a nega, cannot look at it to see whether, in fact, it is tzaras early in the morning, or bein ha'abayim, or late in the day, v'loy b'seich ha'bayis, or inside a house, they have to see it outdoors, v'loy b'yem ha'unan, or on a cloudy day, mipnei shekeha nearest aza, because in all those cases where there's not enough light, a nega that's dimmer, that's not as quite as bright, is going to look nearest Aza, is going to look stronger, because since you have less sunlight, so therefore it's going to stand out more. Tzaras smart is white after all, so when you have less light, it's going to seem to stand out more against the skin, and mistakenly he's going to think that it's a brighter white than it is. And also, on the other hand, you can't do it in the middle of the day, because then they have the other way around. It's so bright that even a bright saras spot, which would be one of the four shades that makes it tame, would look dim. So in other words, in short, the Mishnah describes over there are only certain hours during the day, during the mid-morning or during the mid-afternoon, when a Kohen can look at Saras. So the point is, in other words, that so you would think, based on the Hekesh before, we said Rivim and Negoyim, maybe you have the same limitations. As far as Dinim Amonis, so the Meir tells you that no, the Pasuk was Shaftu Asam B'Choleis, is not telling you that in fact you are allowed to do dinim mamonis any time during the day, and even if it's a cloudy day. To that extent, we don't have that hekesh, but to actually say that you should be able to complete them by night, says Reb Meir that not. So we'll continue. We'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. We still have the what about the other pasuk, B'yom Hanchiles Bonav, where we said we learned from that. That dinim mamonas have to be begun by day, but Reb Meir, we said, is learning the concept that dinim mamonas have to be by day from a hekesh, from the hekesh between rivim and negoyim. So what is he doing with b'yom hanchiles banav? That we'll continue with. We'll deal with tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and then we'll continue how we know that dinim nefashos have to completely be done by day, and we'll continue from there.
Yeah, Shikaya.